You are listening to The News Project for the week of June 10th, 2019, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's episode features stories about the Arlington Renewal Committee's efforts to confront the town's shortage of affordable housing, how to correctly use and maintain a fire extinguisher, Burn Burton Academy's largest ever graduating class, Arlington Memorial High School's 2019 graduating class, and what Dorset should do with 300 acres of recently acquired land on Raptor Lane.
Like much of the rest of the state, the town of Arlington finds itself facing a shortage of affordable workforce housing. What is available is often beyond the means of prospective buyers, especially if they are younger folks starting out and starting families. The Arlington Area Renewal Project, a group of local residents concerned about the direction of the town, who have been meeting regularly for the past 2 years to bring new ideas to the table, zeroed in early on the housing crunch and how it was inhibiting the growth of the community. For example, more than 500 people work at Mack Molding, the town's largest employer, but only a small fraction live in town, often because they can't find local housing. This pattern, spread more widely, impacts the number of students in local schools, driving up per pupil costs, and spreading the tax burden among a smaller pool of residents. So the Renewal Committee organized a housing summit meeting on Wednesday, June 5th, at the West Mountain Inn, to hear from people in real estate, housing development, and local and state officials about what could be done to encourage more housing development or retrofitting and rehabbing older homes. Jim Baker, who has played a leadership role in the Arlington Area Renewal Project, described what prompted them to organize the gathering and where the next steps might lead.
You know, we started just talking with folks, and through conversation and the other issues that we were looking at, you know, we realized our census was going down at the school. We needed to change that trend. We started talking about some other issues around business development. How do you, the volunteer fire department, the volunteer rescue squad, like everybody in the state, they're struggling for members. Well, and then you take a look at the demographics, we're aging out. Bennington County, you heard here this morning, Bennington County is the oldest county in the state. We're part of that, we represent that. And as we started talking to real estate agents, we realized that one of the key issues for us as the renewal project to work on is the idea of affordable housing and housing opportunities to change the demographics and to put younger folks in the community, but also recognizing the fact that coming out of this conversation, which it hasn't come up yet, we may need more housing for the older population.
The meeting featured several panel discussions and dialogue amongst the participants.
And we need to figure out a solution where we can make housing for local people affordable so they can come here and join our communities. A lot of our workforce travels a great distance, and if you're just getting started, you know, and can somehow even buy a house, you often have to go far away to get an affordable home.
I originally looked at renting. There was a lot of rental properties in the area, but they were too expensive because I'm a single 26-year-old paying student loans, car, you know, everything. So looking at more than $1,000 a month basically was completely unfeasible. That's like half of what I make every month. So it was just impossible. And so then I kind of started entertaining the idea of buying a house. And that was, maybe the monthly payments would have been a little bit more affordable, but then you also have to factor in utilities and upkeep. And so then I started looking at getting a third job. And then I kind of was doing some self kind of thinking about, well, if I'm working, you know, over 70 hours a week and to afford this house, I'm not going to be there to enjoy it.
The economics of housing costs were discussed, along with other issues like broadband availability, dealing with distressed properties, rethinking municipal zoning, and the need for more robust wastewater, septic, and sewer systems. Faith Rhodes is a real estate agent and brought that perspective to the conversation.
So I think one of the challenges in Arlington right now is our lack of inventory. We currently only have on the market about 28 homes for sale, and that's everything ranging from a foreclosure foreclosure to a multi-million dollar property. And families who are wanting to move into the town are finding a real difficult time locating the home that they want to buy with, properly priced. New construction would be really nice to see in Arlington, but the hurdles with that for a developer would be the cost of construction versus buying a pre-existing home. So when we're looking at an over $200 price per square foot on new construction, and the sweet spot in Arlington seems to be homes priced between $200 and $250, a developer has to calculate the cost of, a 2,000 square foot home on an acre of land priced, over $200 a square foot really outprices them on that sweet spot when you go to list the home. So it just doesn't make sense for new construction. Combine that with a lack of housing inventory in the town, it creates a real problem. And hopefully we can come to a couple of good suggestions on how to tackle this and move forward. As a town and as a resident of Arlington, I would really like to see some big steps forward from a select board level to really tackle this problem. In 2007, the state of Vermont passed wastewater regulation, creating a real problem for homeowners who have failed systems. There's a lot of red tape and a lot of hurdles to get through. The cost can be prohibitive if you currently own a home and you have a failed system. And that's preventing a lot of problems, especially in the village of Arlington and East Arlington, where we have a lot of flood zones. So it's really not a matter of if those systems will fail. It's a matter of when. And I really think that, adding that infrastructure to the town will be a really big value to the homeowners.
The task of moving forward around creating new housing stock is a multi-tiered question, said Kirk Moore, the president of BMA Architects.
Well, I think they're off to a good start in having the dialogue that they're having, and it is a lot of work to try to get those costs down and to attract private development to address a market of that's not addressed by affordable housing nonprofit groups. So in order to get there, I think you have to look at zoning, you got to look at ways to get the construction costs down and rethink what the market really is and meeting those needs. So hopefully, something will come out of this and they'll move forward and make some progress in accomplishing some of those goals here in Arlington.
Several ideas for attracting younger millennial age residents were also batted around, and some noted their preferences for small, more energy-efficient homes, often located in a town or village center.
Sort of a green mini-community idea that when I would talk about this to high school kids and college kids, they would light up at the thought that they could stay in or return to Vermont to live in a little intentional mini-neighborhood that had, just like you were saying, 3 to 4 almost micro-homes, highly energy efficient, solar powered, sharing a community garden, sharing a community space. I mention it only because I'm certainly not a housing development expert, but when I talk to kids about what it could take to get them to move back to Vermont or to stay in Vermont, that kind of housing option was like nirvana to them. Yes. They were so interested. They would come up and ask me if it was built yet.
The septic and wastewater issue got a lot of attention, with an underutilized system at the local schools being a possible way to obtain more municipal capacity at a lower cost. The day ended with a discussion of longer-term goals for the town. Keith Squires is the chairman of the Arlington Select Board and offered his takeaway.
It's just the fact that you've got a lot of good people working together to come up with some good ideas. That's the summary of the whole thing. I think that as we see funding come down through the whole thought of this whole municipal septic in the middle of town, yeah, we've got to start working on that. But again, funding is crucial. It's not simple.
A report detailing the findings and conclusions from the discussions held at the summit will be one immediate follow-up of the conference. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Hey folks, Haas from GNAT TV. Today we're in Arlington. We're at the fire department. I'm talking with Jamie Poston, who's the fire chief. And today it's all about fire extinguishers and smoke detectors.
Correct.
So I guess let's start with, this is my fire extinguisher. Yep. That the reason I'm here today, one of the reasons is I just got my new insurance, and they said, "How's your fire extinguisher?" And I said, "It's great." Jamie,
how old is it?
Jamie, what's wrong with this?
Okay. Well, first we want to know about how old it is. And do you ever do this with it?
No.
Okay. So one of the problems with an old extinguisher that sits around for a long time is that the powder will actually solidify in the bottom of the extinguisher, and then when you go to discharge it, there won't be anything coming out. So proper maintenance is to once a month
shake that thing,
shake it around, keep now, that powder loose.
Now let me ask you, if right now it's not saying it's charged, right?
Correct. It is.
So, yep. So there's a second
it
thing wrong with
it. It needs to be recharged.
Okay, so this isn't charged.
Right.
But even if it was charged and I didn't shake it, is that still a problem?
You may get some discharge. You won't get 100%.
Right.
So you want to make sure that they're agitated every month or at least every couple months.
Just good to exercise keep that powder for the kids.
Loose.
Okay.
Yours is approximately a 10-pound extinguisher. Standard homeowner extinguisher is a 5-pound. That would be this one here.
It looks so small.
It does. And you've got about 20 seconds worth of firefighting right there, and that's it, if it's used correctly.
All right, so tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm assuming that most homeowners are in the house. Okay, the house is on fire, and they're sort of losing their minds.
Yep.
And they grab their fire extinguisher, they pull the pin, and they go, and it's over in
it's
seconds.
It's a cloud, and it's done, and they haven't successfully put the fire out.
Okay. So there's a real skill here.
There is. There's some training to go along with this. Probably the biggest problem that we see is people do not pull the pin properly. They don't get it out. It'll jam up. It won't come all the way out. And then you go to depress it and it doesn't do anything because it's still locked. Pull the pin, aim at the base of the fire.
The base of the fire.
Base of the fire and sweep it side to side.
Now, if that's on the floor, if it's crawling up the wall.
Hit the base of the fire. It's still going to hit
the base.
And come up. Yep.
Right, because it's going to go like a big cloud. Would you recommend that everyone come and get the thing filled and then actually go home and blast it off so that they can have the experience?
No. An extinguisher like this is approximately $50. It costs you about $17 to refill them. So you're just putting that money out for no reason, right. And it does make a very big mess. Every year during Fire Prevention Week, we have an open house here at the firehouse.
Got it.
We have a pit fire outside. We light a small fire in a controlled setting. And anyone who wants to can come and discharge an extinguisher and
that's terrific.
Put it out.
Okay, and what are those dates again?
It'll be in October. It's usually the second week of October.
Okay.
And we typically go on a Tuesday evening, and we'll do an open house.
So that would be a good time, too, for people to bring their kids.
Absolutely.
Who may be the only one in the house that can stop the fire.
Correct.
Do you recommend that, or do you recommend the kid just leave?
For younger individuals, I would rather have them just get out of the house and be safe.
Out. Right.
Have a meeting place outside the house so that if everybody escapes the house, they meet in one location. When we pull in, we know that everybody's out or that they can tell us that there's still somebody behind.
Right. Like I live in Sandgate, so
yes.
I know that in Sandgate, the odds are, even though you're all going to try your hardest, probably going to lose the house.
There's several factors that come into this.
Yeah.
The time. Time is the biggest one. We had a fire up there last fall. The gentleman went to the neighbor's house. There was nobody home. Ended up driving down to the town hall before he found somebody.
Got it.
He lost probably 10 to 15 minutes in
which
the travel time and everything before we got the call. The house is still standing. It burned out on the inside, but it's still a salvageable structure. It needs a lot of cleanup. Actually, the best thing to do when you leave the house during the day, close the doors. Close all your doors.
Interesting. Slow it down.
He had two bedrooms on the back side of the house. The doors were shut. They were the polymer doors that you buy at Home Depot for $19. Outside, the living room side of the house, completely gutted, burned out. open those doors, the rooms are pristine.
Got it. It needs to be charged.
It does.
Do I bring it here?
You can bring it here. We're here most Tuesday evenings for our training and meetings. We have a company that comes in a couple times a month. We have a bin for them. We put your name on them. They come in and they recharge them. It's yours would probably be about $17, $18. These run around $14, $15. One thing you will notice is you have an all-steel nozzle at the top. Those are rechargeable. If the top of your extinguisher, like a lot of you buy at Home Depot or
right.
Miles here in town, they have a plastic top, a plastic nozzle. Those are throwaways.
How many do you have in your house?
Four.
Four?
Four. I have one in the basement, two in the basement. Two in the basement, one near the kitchen, and one upstairs.
Why the basement?
Our washer and dryer in the basement, as well as our oil burner.
I take it that these are really only useful if you are in your house when the fire starts and you have a chance to stop it.
These are for your first line of defense. So as you say, you've noticed a small kitchen fire, or your dryer is catching fire, something along those lines. If you've got a fully involved room and contents fire,
yeah,
this isn't going to do a thing for you.
So
we're going to be bringing big water for that.
And it would be better if you get out of the house.
Absolutely.
Because you sitting in here with this little thing.
If you've got a small fire, you sweep this, you knock that fire down, you still want to get out of the house. Because there's going to be so many chemicals and fumes coming off of that, even after putting the fire out. That's actually the worst time to be in it, is when all that soot and everything is then billowing out because you've knocked the fire itself down.
Right.
It's the byproduct that's what gets everybody. It's not the fire that kills and injures, it's the smoke. You pull the pin and you go to discharge it and there's nothing coming out, get out.
Get out.
Get out.
It's time to leave.
It's time to leave. Don't mess around with it. Fire moves way too quick, and the longer you take to call us, the worse it's going to be.
I have a 200-year-old house. That thing's going to burn like no tomorrow, isn't it?
Most likely balloon construction. If it gets in the walls, it's going to the attic, it's going to the basement.
And it's incredibly dry after all these years.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. It'll be the best fire I ever had in my house.
Well, I hope not.
Two 206 seniors, the largest graduating class in Burn Burton Academy's 190-year-long history, received their diplomas during commencement exercises held at the school on Friday, June 7th. The graduates processed up the walkway to the senior steps of the school's front entrance one last time as students, to the applause of the school's faculty, before lining up to give their soon-to-be former teachers a round of applause as well. Then it was up to the hill to the field behind the school, where the graduates processed in to the sounds of pomp and circumstance.
Hey there. Sorry again. I totally didn't mean to do that. Once again.
Graduating class members and their guests heard welcoming messages from Headmaster Mark Tashin and from Seth Bongartz, the chairman of the school's Board of Trustees. Then came a double salutatorian address by Trinity Delano and Angelina Scarlatta.
Naturally, as we have grown, so have our challenges, and in turn, their answers. Simplicity and certainty gave way to complexity and doubt, the unknown. It has undoubtedly taken a lot for all of us to get to this exact point. Tears have been shed, coffee has been imbibed, friendships have ebbed and flowed, waned and waxed like the moon. We have carried ourselves forward, sometimes gracefully, somewhat graciously, sometimes in a manner of seemingly ridiculous fashion.
They were followed by Rachel Hammer, who gave the valedictorian address.
A week ago, I thought I might actually die if I had to speak in front of this many people. Turns out, it's not as scary as I thought, but I'm still extremely nervous up here. But let me tell you, 3 years ago, the hot mess that I was could have never done this. You all helped me grow into someone who can overcome their fear, and I hope that you all grow into people who can overcome your challenges. As FDR said, and every teacher ever has quoted, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Thank you.
The staff address was given by Nancy Biller, the campus supervisor.
Working hard to achieve your dreams does not mean you must be cutthroat and put others down to come out on top. You will go so much further in life by persevering through your hardships with kindness and compassion towards others. When you need to stand up for yourself, be diplomatic and empathetic. Always know your worth. You may not like everyone who crosses your path, but remember to give people a chance. Life presents various circumstances on a daily basis, with the possibility of things changing in the blink of an eye.
The main commencement speaker was Daniel French, Vermont's education secretary. He is also the father of one of the graduating seniors. His talk explored the conflict and tension around Vermont's state motto of freedom and unity and the mix of nostalgia and amnesia that often impacts historical memory.
Now that you have completed the requirements of a Vermont High School diploma, however, it is my duty as secretary to tell you the truth. And the truth is, contradictions like freedom and unity are never really resolved. Each generation must struggle on its own to reconcile these kinds of contradictions. Like preceding generations of Vermonters, you'll have to find a way to balance the rights of the individual with the rights of the community. But you will need to do so in a time when technology offers unprecedented opportunities for both hyper-individualism and community building. The challenge of this task is greater for you than preceding generations because of this complexity. You are citizens of the world like no other generation. Instead of needing to build communities among unique school districts and towns, you will be building communities across ethnic, cultural, and global boundaries that we would have viewed as beyond the realm of possibility. I have no doubt if you are successful in this work, you will be deemed our greatest generation.
After awards were presented to a group of seniors being recognized for accomplishments both inside and outside of the school's classrooms, it was time for the main event, handing out those long-sought diplomas.
Could the first row to my right please rise? Garen Etienne Reyes Aberth.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Burn Burton Academy Class of 2019. You may let those caps fly.
Burn Burton's 186th annual commencement was the second one held at the school's upper athletic field after several years in a row where inclement weather forced the ceremonies indoors at the Riley Rink at Hunter Park. But few clouds have marred the spectacular weather this day, as the 206 seniors headed off into the next chapters of their lives. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The 30 members of Arlington Memorial High School's graduating class of 2019 arrived at their high school on Saturday, June 8th, one last time as students before leaving as the school's latest alumni, diplomas in hand. They marched into their school's gymnasium to the sounds of pomp and circumstance, and to the cheers and applause from parents, teachers, and guests who had gathered there for the occasion. Principal Sarah Merrill opened the ceremonies with a few welcoming remarks.
I'd like to begin by highlighting and celebrating some interesting and important statistics about our seniors. 30 members of the senior class. 40% are the first children in their family to graduate from AMHS. 30 Hobie leaders, one soccer All-American, 25 enrolled in post-secondary education. 3 received technical certifications during their high school career. 70% high school athletes. 54, the number of colleges and universities that accepted our scholars. 9 members in the music program. 1 Congressional Art Award artist. 19 held part-time jobs. 17 are the last child in their family to graduate from AMHS. 3 international students, 5 entering the workforce. 10% were successful hunters this season.
She was followed by James Ashman, a member of the school's faculty, who gave the main commencement address.
And you may not realize it today, sitting here with your adult life ahead of you, but this place has put you ahead in many ways, regardless of the path you choose. At a school like this one, you cannot be lost in the crowd. You cannot go unnoticed. You cannot simply exist. You are known by every teacher and adult. By all means, find that which you are passionate about and give that passion your best. But also continue to seek out opportunities that will help you maintain a well-rounded life. Continue to venture into new and uncertain ideas because you don't know any better, but you are willing to learn and find out. Keep your AMHS well-rounded attitude. You and those around you will be all the richer for it. Thank you and good luck.
He was in turn followed by Therese Belknap, who gave the salutatorian address.
We are a family. I stand here at this podium, my classmates surround me, and we in turn are surrounded by your love. We sense your inspiration. We acknowledge your guidance and teachings.
Then came the class valedictorian, Shauna Staub.
20 minutes, we're going to have a fancy piece of paper in our hands telling us we might know lots of answers about biology, algebra, or history. But I'm not talking about those types of answers. I'm talking about answers to questions like, am I being the best person I can be? How do I wish to be seen by others? Do I wish to be remembered as the person who went out of their way to put others down or to lift others up? High school is such a small fraction of our lives, and it is also a fraction of the Arlington community. Even though being comfortable can sometimes prevent us from growing, the comfort of our community has helped us answer those questions. Being a community does not mean we are all the same. On the contrary, being community means taking our differences and making them that which brings us together. I am so proud and so grateful to have had the Arlington community by my side throughout this crazy journey, and I hope my fellow graduates share this appreciation. Arlington has remained a constant in my life and has always given me a shoulder when I needed one. We are connected, we are supportive, we are compassionate, we are Arlington. Thank you.
After that, it was on to the main reason everyone had converged on the gymnasium in the first place. The handing out of the diplomas.
Linus Beloian. Colleen Marie Blomberg. Emily Elizabeth Calder. A. Pike.
Have met all graduation requirements set forth by the state of Vermont and the Arlington Board of Education. Congratulations, class of 2019.
Then the class processed back outside, now graduates, and on to the next phase in their lives. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Last year, in July 2018, the town of Dorset acquired more than 300 acres of land adjacent to its Owl's Head Town Forest for the bargain price of $100,000. The property parcel was appraised at nearly $1.9 million and had been intended to be developed as a high-end housing project by the former owners. But with that market struggling in the years immediately following the Great Recession that started in 2008, the concept didn't work out. The property is located off of Route 30 on Raptor Lane behind the J.K. Adams store and not far from the Dorset Quarry. Now the town is trying to decide what to do with this new acquisition. a Raptor Lane steering committee has been formed and has been meeting monthly for the past couple of months, brainstorming some ideas of what might best serve the community. With the property already partially developed, with some infrastructure and driveways providing access into the 8 subdivided lots, one thought has been to create more housing, but of the workforce, middle-income variety. Other ideas have included a business incubator, a public park, putting in walking and biking trails, a dog park, or just leaving it alone and leaving it for public use, sort of what is the case at the moment. Recently, we sat down with Town Manager Rob Giotti and two members of the steering committee, who are also select board members, to discuss some of their ideas on what might be good uses to put the area to.
The committee so far, I think, they talked about a lot of options from housing for workforce housing to straight up, you know, complete conservation, which would be, you know, adding all of it to the Owl's Head Town Forest. And in between there's lots of other things that have been discussed, from other, you know, outdoor rec type opportunities in terms of trails, you know, some kind of potential commercial mixture of things as well. So the idea is that they'll come out with you know, those lists of options, and trying to have some more specificity within each one of those, and come up with a report that that the public can then review and give some, you know, some input on when it's in its draft form. And then after the input is kind of contemplated and added into it, it would be some kind of a final report that would then go to the select board with maybe some recommendations for short-term, long-term things that could be done.
Housing questions are a very hot topic in Vermont's economic circles these days, as private sector businesses and public sector officials worry about stagnant population growth and aging population, and the difficulty many younger families are encountering when trying to acquire homes as they contemplate starting families. And like many other communities, the housing and real estate inventory is not skewed towards making it easy for first-time homebuyers to get involved. So using Raptor Lane to help out there has some support, says Jim Solzgiver, a steering committee member who's also on the town select board.
There are a lot of different ideas. We've essentially, you know, tried to break it down into 5 different categories of ideas for use for the property. And we're expecting shortly to have an initial engineering study on the property that'll give us some ideas of the, you know, what are opportunities, what could be, what could get in the way of you know, pursuing some of those opportunities. But, you know, we have a real lack of workforce housing for, you know, people who are teachers, people or, you know, other people who, you know, find it very difficult in a very expensive Dorset, property-wise. Also looked at, you know, could we provide any support for, we've got a lot of small businesses have started in Vermont. And so another possibility is, you know, something that would support, you know, continuing to have new companies, you know, develop in Dorset, in our area, new small companies grow up like a business incubator. There's an obvious use for a lot of it. You know, the property, you know, abuts the town forest. So with 300 plus acres, there's also a great opportunity to add to our existing recreational opportunities.
Another idea is to create a community that focuses on energy efficiency, said Liz Ruffa, another steering committee and select board member.
I think what's one thing that has really excited the committee already is how we really have an opportunity with this great asset and with all the great ideas that certainly we've started to come up with, and we know that members of the Dorset community will only add to, is for us to also be a model community in terms of energy efficiency, smart building use, smart building practices, and to be able to really reap benefits for all of the environmental and social inputs that good building like that does for people. Building a resilient community, whether it's a variety of mixed-use buildings and assets, that it would be something where energy efficiency, water use, and shared utilities could really be forward-facing for the town and be energy efficient.
Both of them emphasized the need for public input, and an upcoming event in July organized by the Vermont Council on Rural Development offers one way of getting local input and feedback. The council is organizing a Climate Economy Initiative visit to Dorset on July 24th, which would be a chance for residents to weigh in with their thoughts. Meanwhile, the steering committee is meeting monthly, and its next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, June 26th. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.